to the Progressive Radio Network, your source for news and information.
Let me hear the worshipers! Where's all of my praises? I want everybody around the world to put your hands together because all the praise belongs to God. Here we go.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to take two looks at the transgender person and present information that you would not have heard that is open for discussion. I'll be asking you to call in and share your points of view. It is from a pediatrician, and we're caught up in identity politics to a level that I've never seen in my life, and where I certainly, all of us, I believe, not just me, but all of us want equality in all things, respect, appreciation for that which is unique in the human spirit. What happens when all that's bypassed and we simply say that we, a small selective group, choose to create rules that you must abide by or you're the other, you're the enemy? That's what's happening now. We'll deal with that. Also today, no guests so that we can focus on some commentaries. I have a commentary on my own thoughts as well as those of Chris Wright. Counterpunch our passive society. Why aren't we being more proactive even when our own health and well-being and future are at stake? Also, Bill Binney. He is one of the first of the whistleblowers. 37 years he spent at the National Security Agency. He knows everything. And he is saying in this discussion that President Obama knew about the spying on Trump and would have had to have approved it. Also, Dr. Peter Glidden on why aren't we paying attention to how many people are dying at the hands of medical doctors? Why aren't we changing? We'll play that. That's a sobering interview. And time permitting, turn off your router at night. I wanted to do it yesterday. We just didn't have enough time. What's wrong with your router? That which takes your incoming signal and then shares it to your computer. We have a lot to discuss. And I'm going to begin with the University of Liege, which is in Belgium. They talk about the transgender brains are more like their desired gender from an early age. And what this means is this. Brain activity and structure in transgender adolescents more closely resembles the typical activation patterns of their desired gender. That's according to the findings to be presented in Barcelona at the European Society of Endocrinology at their annual meeting. Now, these findings suggest that differences in brain function may occur early in development, and that brain imaging may be a useful tool for earlier identification of transgenderism in young people. And transgenderism, at least if you're not familiar with it, is the experience or identification with a gender different to the assigned biological sex. And whilst gender dysphoria is the distress experienced by transgender people and may be present from a very young age, and although gender dysphoria incidence is rare, gender identity is an essential part of the psychological health. And if unaddressed, can lead to serious psychological issues. And current strategies for addressing gender identity in younger people involve psychotherapy or delaying puberty with hormones. And we never talk about what's wrong with that. Well, purely from a health point of view, I will see that that is discussed today. And then we'll look at the genetics, because it's really in the genes. And as long as you are looking at the genes, then it's very understandable if someone says, I was born as a little boy, but I feel like I'm a little girl. And if you can read it in the chromosomes, and you can, and in the DNA, which you also can, then there is a reasonable association that that person should be helped and encouraged in maturing into what they choose to be. But what if it's purely psychological? What if it's based upon the family dynamics? There's a question we're not asking ourselves in society today. So let's pull back for a moment and go to neutral. I have found that if you really want to understand the deeper context of any message and see the width and breadth of an issue, pull back so you're not making a prejudged mindset, because everything thereafter is going to be filtered. We have just gone through what arguably could be stated that we've had the two worst parenting generations in American history. The baby boomers were a bad generation, bad to the bone, when it came to parenting. I'm a baby boomer, our parents were the best generation. They suffered the most, they sacrificed the most, they experienced the most hardship. And yet, we got the benefit of everything that they went through without us having to suffer. We then gave our children, the X generation, those who were in their 40s or early 50s, we gave them way too much and gave them false expectations. We created the egotism of the me generation. Everything is mine, and I will go for it. Personal manifest destiny. I'll let nothing stand in my way. If there's a ladder, I'll be the first up it. If there's something to gain, I'll be the first to win it. And then that generation had children, and they're now the millennials. And the millennials are, as a whole, certainly there are exceptions, but as a whole, they're the most dysfunctional generation, most disconnected generation, the most pain generation, the most depressed, the highest suicide, the least active in society, and the least engaged in solving problems. As a whole, you certainly have very dynamic, conscientious, motivated, socially aware, and humanistically valued millennials, but you can give a lot of that credit to their parents, grandparents, and the environment they grew up in. So we are not looking at the messages, the environment, that these two generations of parents have given to young people. So right now, a kid feels that all that's important is not facts, not truth, but rather how they feel. And therefore, everyone is supposed to acquiesce to that. Well, there's a price to pay for that type of indulgence. We'll discuss that. So that's coming at you. But there is very much now an association that when you see a transgender brain, and you match the transgender brain with the hormones, the chromosomes, and affect the genetics, you'll see that they are in alignment. More on that later. Purdue University took a look at, do people benefit from whey protein, whey, W-H-E-Y, that's a dairy protein, when they exercise? And the answer is yes. But there have been several studies on looking at whey protein. Here is the problem, and this was published in Nutrition Reviews. Whey protein is a high-quality protein, but it's coming from dairy, and that can create allergic reactions. And you don't need that. You can get the same high-quality amino acid patterns from brown rice, from hemp powder, from split pea powder, from soy powder. You do not need whey protein. I never recommend it because I've seen too many people have allergic reactions. A good study from the University of Toronto shows that tree nuts, there's your pecans and walnuts and almonds, can improve type 2 diabetes. And this is one of the largest studies to date on nuts and diabetes that have been published in a major peer-reviewed journal, the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. And the study shows that approximately 2 ounces, that's it, 2 ounces That's what would fit into a tablespoon. So just imagine taking a tablespoon, scooping up some nuts and put it in your hand, eating that each day. That will have an improvement in your glycemic control and your blood lipids if you are diabetic, and that can help you. This was done at the University of Toronto and St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto as well. So Brazil nuts, cashews, hazelnuts, pecans, pine nuts, pistachios, macadamias, walnuts, and almonds. Take your pick. They're all good. And by the way, peanuts are not a nut. They're a legume. And they do improve blood lipid levels, and they do help with your blood sugar level, especially if you're non-insulin-dependent diabetic. Cranberries can reduce the risk of urinary tract infections in otherwise healthy women. Now, we're talking about millions of women per year, just in the United States, end up with urinary tract infections. One of the most common reasons for that is lack of proper hygiene. The urethra in a woman is shorter than the urethra in a man. Frequently, when women are wiping but not washing their anus, bacteria, which are very much alive and moving, with the normal friction of the glutes or the cheeks moving back and forth, walking, sitting, splaying, they move and they migrate down. They're going to go down towards the vagina, and then they can get up into the urethra. That's one way. So if after you wiped, you wash with soap and water, or better still, if you have a bidet, that would be the best of all, soap, water, and a bidet, then you're cleaning out all that bacteria. But also there's another reason, a very common reason. When these same women are having intercourse, the testicles are hitting up against the anus, and then the anus is taking the fecal matter, smearing it on the testicles, wiping it across the vagina. That very quick and easy entry of those pathogens into the urethra and then into the bladder. So, proper hygiene, then cranberry juice, unsweetened cranberry concentration. And cranberries, this was published in the journal Nutrition, reduces the risk of urinary tract infection reoccurrence. Now, if you want to make sure it really is good, take 5 drops of wild oregano oil and put it into an 8-ounce glass of the cranberry juice. Take that down. That really makes a difference. And this was this is just one of 7 randomized controlled trials of healthy women who had reoccurring urinary tract infections. So it makes a difference. Harvard School of Public Health did a study published in the Endocrine Society's Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism showing that couples who eat more seafood tend to have sexual intercourse more often and get pregnant faster than other couples trying to conceive. Why? In part because seafood is an important source of protein and other nutrients for women who are or may become pregnant. My concern is, yes, that is possible because it's also rich in zinc, but seafood is very rich in mercury, and that's not good. There are nutrients and herbs that have been used, like the amla, horny goat weed, tribulus. There are dozens of known and proven aphrodisiacs to enhance libido, L-arginine, the amino acid, choline, the neurotransmitter, and beet juice. All very good. But the key is first detoxifying for at least a year before having an effort at conception, because then you overcome defective sperm and you're able to have a full-term pregnancy with no side effects. You lessen the likelihood of having any harm. So It was a good observation, but you have to go beyond what Harvard found. Rice becomes less nutritious as CO2 levels rise, University of Tokyo. What it's saying is that the air pollution, the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, will reduce the nutritional value of rice. That's according to an international research team that analyzed rice samples from field experiments. It's done at the University of Tokyo. You're getting iron, zinc, protein, B's 1, 2, 5, and 9, all reduced when that rice is grown in a polluted environment. So that's why if rice is grown in a healthy environment, and in America you've got a lot of rice is grown down in Texas, Desmith County, and that's healthy soil, healthy environment, no pollution. And there's parts of California that grow rice that would be fine, and also in North Dakota. So we can grow a lot of good, healthy rice right here, and then a lot of the best rice that I've ever consumed comes from South America. They have a red rice down there that's really delicious. Not easy to find, but when you do, has a unique flavor to it. So, best to buy rice where it's not polluted. And also, to round up our health segment, there's a University of Guelph uncovering a cause that pesticides can increase the likelihood of developing Parkinson's disease. So we've known this. This is not the first study. It's just contributing more information that pesticides disrupt cells in a way that mimics the effects of mutagens known to cause Parkinson's disease. So detoxification can help you detoxify, and then rejuvenating with NAD and L-carnosine and chlorophyll from spirulina and chlorella and wheatgrass juice over a period of about a year can help rebalance and rejuvenate those cells. The article was published in the Federation of American Societies of Experimental Biology. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Null. We're going to take a break. Come right back. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We're going to play a couple audio clips before I go to a commentary, and then we're going to open it up for you to call in and share your points of view. We're going to begin with this discussion by Dr. Peter Giddin, G-I-D-D-E-N, on the topic of medical doctors being a leading cause of death and why there is no discussion, no effort at change. And when you consider how many people die each year because of medical neglect or medical errors, you would think that this would be the number one topic being discussed. You're dealing with a low count of 500,000, more realistic 700,000 to 1,000,000. Let me just put this in perspective, because we did the definitive research. No one has done the research we did on this. It took us 5 years, not part-time, full-time, 5 scientists. We published a paper on it called Death by Medicine. If you did the simple math, and let's just be a little conservative in our figures and actually understate it. Let's say that we had 600,000 people a year for 20 years. That's 12 million people died because of medical mistakes. And those are very conservative figures. Some years it's 1,000,000 people. But even 12 million people who died who didn't have to, shouldn't that get someone's attention? Hasn't? Shouldn't that be on someone's talking points of what should be dealt with in upcoming election cycles? Not at all. Doesn't exist. It's like it's invisible. but it's real. Let's hear what Dr. Glidden has to say.
Doctor, you hit on the third leading cause of death in the United States, yeah. And I'm sure most of us could figure it's either heart-related or cancer or diabetes, things like that. Can you clue us into what that is and why?
Okay, and thank you for asking that, because this is the 10,000-pound gorilla in the room that nobody's talking about. The third leading cause of death, as published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, is MD-directed treatments. This means you go to a medical doctor, an MD, he gives you a treatment and you die from it. According to the United States Department of Health and Human Services, 15,000 Medicare patients a month are killed by MD treatment, and nobody goes to jail. A handful of terrorists fly two planes into the Twin Towers. 3,500 people die and we go to war. But 15,000 people a month are killed by medical doctor treatments, and we don't bat an eyelash. This is because we have been, I don't want to say brainwashed, that's not the correct term, but we have been, for the last 100 years, kind of led into this false belief. You know, I think it was Marcus Welby that started it, that the medical doctor is king and knows everything about everything. And really, you need to just shut up and follow your medical doctor's advice. Most people in the United States have no idea at all of the history of the evolution of medicine in the United States. In the early 1900s, it was a relatively level playing field between the chiropractors, the osteopaths, the homeopaths, and the MDs. In 1915, 1920, there was something called the Flexner Report. The Carnegie Corporation funded this man named Abraham Flexner. He went all around the country, and he went on stagecoach and train and horseback. This was before the interstate highway system, right? Took Flexner 5 years to do this. He went all around the country and did an inventory of all of the medical schools that prescribed drugs. He brought the list back to the Carnegies, who own drug companies, and then the Carnegies and the Rockefellers gave millions of dollars of free money to the medical schools and hospitals in the United States that were prescribing drugs. That was the beginning of the end. After the Flexner Report, there was no more level playing field in the United States. And the MDs started a juggernaut that's taken off. Most people in the United States think that the predominant medicine here, MD-directed pharmaceutical medicine, we think that those guys are top dog because their therapeutics are better than the homeopaths or the naturopaths or the chiropractors. It's not. They're in the driver's seat because of political and financial coalitions that were built at the turn of the century that most people have no idea of at all. And it's a gigantic problem. And I mean, it's crazy, right? It's the third leading cause of death. And yet, when the government makes noise about messing with people's insurance, everybody freaks out. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other thing to talk about, isn't it? Because what is medical insurance? When you buy medical insurance, what are you doing? You're betting that you're going to get so sick, you will not be able to afford it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Right. And then, so you pay good money every month to gain access to a system of medicine that's the third leading cause of death in the United States. We need our heads examined, quite frankly. That's why we give Dr. Wallach and myself, collectively, we give 400 free lectures a year. And we're building a grassroots network because people don't know this. I mean, people, I come to my lectures and they look at me and say, couch potatoes live longer? Medical doctors are the third leading cause of death? You know, what's going on here? We're like the people, you know, in Galileo's time saying, hey, everybody, you know, it's the sun that's at the center of the solar system, not the earth. Well, hey, everybody, the earth is round, it's not flat. Hey, everybody, slavery's a bad thing. Right? This is a, we have a social agenda here. Why do we have a social agenda? Because people are suffering needlessly. You wouldn't believe, as God is my witness, you would not believe the things that I've seen people recover from in holistic medicine. It's the body's ability to fix itself is remarkable. most of the time. All that the body needs to do that is the raw materials that it needs to do that. And we need to stop eating food that's hurting the body. You know, if you put diesel fuel in an unleaded engine, even if it's a brand new Ferrari, it's going to run like crap if it runs at all. And there's nothing wrong with the car. It just had the wrong fuel. It's the same with the human body. You give the human body the raw materials that it needs, clean up the diet, Superman, Superwoman. And, you know, if you don't get to super status, then at least your blood pressure normalizes, at least your arthritis goes away, at least your anxiety and panic attacks go away, and you can sleep through the night.
Okay. So finally there is the discussion. The question is, why are we not talking about how we can save lives by preventing deaths at the hands of doctors and operating rooms that are contaminated, medications that have had no real tests for safety and efficacy? And it's as if this is not politically correct, and yet we have more people dying from this. He said it was the third leading cause, and that is, was only published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, but they left out people dying of bed sores, 80,000 one year. And by the way, those bed sores, those ulcers are preventable. And also people die of infections in hospitals. And if people dying of infections in hospitals, a high percentage of those are doctors or nurses in operating rooms that did not use proper sanitation. And malnutrition also. So we added in all the causes, and it was the number one cause, not the number three cause. But still it's getting no attention, like 18 million hungry children going to bed each day without adequate food, no discussion at all. So these are things I believe we should talk about. Now we're going to have a discussion with a board-certified pediatrician, this woman. She's challenging the idea that for purely political identity reasons, whatever a child says they want or feel is what we should immediately acquiesce and give them. So if a young boy says that he feels more like being a girl, then that's exactly what you should do. Or young girl, boy, that's what you should do. And she's simply bringing another part of the equation in, the actual level of chromosomes and genes, and what happens if a child is growing up in a household that is creating an altered perception of their reality based upon the feedback they're getting from their parents. That's never discussed. Today, everything is about what someone feels, and therefore reality begins when you feel something. Wow, what could possibly go wrong there? Let's listen to what she has to say, and then your opportunity to call in, share your thoughts, agree, disagree, and part or whole. But we've got to hear more sides of the argument before we start locking everything and codifying it in stone that there's only one truth, and that is what those who control the politics of choice determine for us.
Congratulations, it's a boy. Or congratulations, it's a girl. As a pediatrician for nearly 20 years, that's how many of my patient relationships began. Our bodies declare our sex. Biological sex is not assigned. Sex is determined at conception by our DNA, stamped into every cell of our bodies. Human sexuality is binary. Either you have a normal Y chromosome and develop into a male, or you don't, and you will develop into a female. There are at least 6,500 genetic differences between men and women. Hormones and surgery cannot and do not change this. Look, an identity is not biological, it is psychological. Identity has to do with thinking and feeling. Thoughts and feelings are not biologically hardwired. Our thinking and feeling may be factually right or factually wrong. For example, if I walk into my doctor's office today and say, "Hi, I'm Margaret Thatcher," my physician will say I am delusional and give me an antipsychotic. However, if instead I walked in and said, "I am a man," he would say, "Congratulations, you're transgender." If I were to say, "Doctor, I am suicidal. I'm an amputee trapped in a normal body. Please surgically remove my leg, I'll be diagnosed with body identity integrity disorder. But if I walk up to that same doctor and say, I'm a man, sign me up for a double mastectomy, my physician will. See, according to most mainstream medical organizations, if you want to cut off a healthy arm or a healthy leg, you're mentally ill. But if you want to cut off healthy breasts or a penis, you're transgender. Let's be clear, no one is born transgender. If gender identity were hardwired in the brain before birth, identical twins would have the same gender identity 100% of the time. They don't. I had one little boy, a patient we'll call Andy. Between the ages of 3 and 5, he increasingly played with girls and stereotypical girl toys and started saying he was a girl. I referred the parents and Andy to a therapist. Sometimes mental illness of a parent or abuse of the child are factors. But more commonly, the child has misperceived family dynamics and internalized a false belief. In the middle of one session, Andy put down the toy truck and held on to the Barbie and said, Mommy and Daddy, you don't love me when I'm a boy. What the therapist learned is that when Andy was 3, his sister with special needs was born. She required significantly more of his parents' care and attention. Andy misperceived this as, Mommy and Daddy love girls. If I want them to love me again, I have to be a girl. With family therapy, Andy got better. Today, Andy's parents would be told something quite different. They would hear, this is who Andy really is. You must change his name, ensure that everyone treats him as a girl, or else he will commit suicide. As Andy would approach puberty, the experts would put him on puberty blockers so that he could continue to impersonate a girl. Experts assure us, it doesn't matter that we've never tested puberty blockers in biologically normal children. It doesn't matter that when blockers are used to treat prostate cancer in men and gynecologic problems in women, that they cause problems with memory. We don't need testing. No, we need to arrest his physical development now, or he'll commit suicide. But this is not true. Instead, when supported in their biological sex through natural puberty, the vast majority of gender-confused children get better. Yet, we are chemically castrating gender-confused children with puberty blockers. Then, we permanently sterilize many of them by adding cross-sex hormones. Cross-sex hormones are estrogen and testosterone. Those put young children at risk for heart disease, strokes, diabetes, cancers, and even the very emotional problems that experts claim to be preventing. P.S. If a girl who insists she is a man has been on testosterone daily for 1 year, she's cleared to get a bilateral mastectomy at age 16. Now, mind you, the American Academy of Pediatrics recently came out with a report that urges pediatricians to caution teenagers about getting tattoos because tattoos are essentially permanent and can cause scarring. But this same AAP is 110% in support of 16-year-old girls getting a double mastectomy, even without parental consent, so long as the girl insists that she is a man and has been taking testosterone daily for 1 year. Let's be clear, to indoctrinate all children from preschool forward with the lie that they could be trapped in the wrong body disrupts the very foundation of a child's reality testing. If a child can't trust the reality of their physical bodies, who or what can they trust? Transgender ideology in schools is psychological abuse that often leads to chemical castration, sterilization, and surgical mutilation. If that's not child abuse, ladies and gentlemen, what is?
That's her perspective. I'd like yours. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I believe that we should be opening up all of these areas of identity politics and issues for more in-depth discussion. I'm seeing things happen now from censorship in schools where if someone doesn't like the topic you're talking on or how you're discussing it, if you're a professor, you can be challenged, and they are. As a result, there is a deep fear right now that you could be alienating a student by having them not feel comfortable. And if they don't feel comfortable with what you're saying, they'll determine that maybe they don't feel safe in your class. So they're setting up in universities cry rooms, comfort rooms, you know, hug rooms, because someone might say something in a class that disrupts them. Does anyone besides myself see something wrong with this kind of mindset? And these are the people that are supposed to go out there and deal with the hard issues of the world that we're, how in the hell are they going to deal with tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes? What in the middle of an earthquake, in the middle of a volcano, if they're in the Big Island, what are they going to go to find a safe room to hug a pillow? In the real world, a law in and of itself does not prevent another person from thinking racist thoughts, misogynist thoughts, hateful thoughts, violent thoughts. It only limits to the degree that it can a person acting on them. We're creating people who believe that because they feel something, it's real. I'll give you a few ideas of this. I enjoy some of Tucker Carlson's comments and in his debates. He does more debating than any other media person. And I would agree with some, disagree with others, but there's one person he keeps having on, and in my opinion, she is the so-called liberal Ann Coulter. She's come up with some really radicalized ideas that I find offensive, but that's just me. For example, there was recently a discussion that, and again, this is this identity politics, that you should get the permission of a baby before you change his diapers. Otherwise, you're violating and starting the process of violating the sanctity of that little baby's body. As if somehow, and this one guest, this so-called Sherpa guru or whatever, liberal Sherpa guru, some title like that, her name is Kathy Arroyo, that you don't have the right, and you should look for signs in your baby's eyes, or in some way the baby should express whether they want to have their diaper changed or not. So let's say the baby doesn't want their diaper changed. So you're not supposed to change the diaper unless it gives you in some way permission. This is the absurdity of how extremely radicalized this has gone. She also does not believe in breastfeeding, that breastfeeding is a violation of the woman, and that it's much better for the man to give a formula. It's more natural. Therefore, it's not natural to breastfeed. And I'm thinking, how would anyone entertain that as being a legitimate discussion? But that's what is happening. And she also believes that women in America doing yoga are engaged in what she calls white supremacy. Why? Because they're taking a culture, Indian culture, and the yoga and history and religion behind yoga, and they're enjoying it in America for strictly physical aspects. And therefore, American women are not understanding, and therefore that's white supremacy. This is where we are going in our society right now, where these extraordinarily imbalanced and malfunctioned thoughts are permeating social discussion. Yet where do you have a discussion on repealing the laws, including Citizens United, that takes funding out of politics? So any person, no matter how poor, could run for an office, and doing it based upon lottery systems. Where do you have a mass movement to take the millions of homes that have been foreclosed on and provide homes for people who are homeless? It doesn't exist. What about having a way of getting rid of welfare prisons? No, there is no movement. Stopping asset forfeiture, not arresting anyone, not giving them a ticket, but taking their assets. It's not up for discussion. So you see the things that are really important, the things that mean something, forgiving all student debt, having public education. If you want to go to a private school and pay whatever you want, that's your right, that's your freedom of choice. But the commons should also be acknowledged. And right now they're not. What about making anyone who's committed a crime against humanity responsible? We never do that in America. We should. What about getting rid of our CIA and most of our intelligence agencies that are spying on the American public? But we're not doing it. What about even having an open dialogue on the freedom to say what we want without being categorized as domestic terrorists for saying something that may be challenging the government or big corporations? We won't discuss that. So we're discussing the wrong things, and we're putting all of our energy in the wrong places, and we're wondering why we're not going to have a positive outcome to any of this. Your thoughts. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. That is our callback number. And let's go over and say hello to Maxelina from California. Hi, Maxelina. You're on the air.
Good morning, Gary. Yes. Now, your question is, what do I think about the transgender Kate, what she said?
Yes.
What was her name again?
Her name, I do not have her name.
Okay.
Her name was not identified on the video clip.
Okay. Well, I must say, I listened to it, and some sort of a light went off, and I thought, wow, I don't know, this is food for thought. I think it makes sense, listening to a very brief tape, mind you. I'd have to do a lot more research, perhaps, and this is not something I've researched, but in the small town that I live in, there are a few people who've identified as transgender. I worked with one of them. She came in as a gal and pretty much left as a guy after some time. And there's a really young person in town who's going through this now, and she's actually an only child. She's 11, and she was born as a male and is now trying to cross over to female. And I don't know if I've had a certain amount of brainwashing, feeling tremendous empathy for this little girl or boy, whatever she is. But listening to this tape, I mean, I would have second thoughts about encouraging her to have surgery. I don't know. So it leaves me questioning it, quite frankly.
That's a good place to start. I did a commentary that is playing on some of the stations today. And in that commentary, which I did Tuesday night at the Progressive Commentary Hour, the commentary was about the danger of becoming a true believer, where you become so radicalized and immovable, unblinking, unwavering in an absolute belief that no amount of argument, no amount of evidence, no amount of facts, no amount of persuasion is going to change your mind. And when Nancy Pelosi said, and correctly so, she said, you know, there's a spirit, there's a spark of spirit in all people. She is correct. It is more than a spark. We are all born perfect spiritual human beings. But the issue was not, do we all have that spark or more? It's what have we allowed it to become? Because at the end of the day, Maxelina, are you going to be judged by what you say or what you do?
Probably both, but more by what I have done.
That's correct, because we are what we do. If you tell someone that you can be trusted and then you lie, you can't be trusted. If you say, believe in me, and then you cheat on your partner, then you've cheated on your partner. You are, at the end of the day, like it or not, we are what we manifest, for better or worse, or some combination. So the idea that we have one of the most vicious gang in the world, taking people's hearts out of their body, cutting off their heads, being no different than ISIS. It reminds me of the notion of the good Nazi. What was really hard for people to understand was how could people who get up in the morning and a soldier kiss his wife and hug the family and all have a breakfast together and find cheer in that moment and then go off and go to Auschwitz or one of the concentration camps and oversee thousands of lives per day ending and torturing others, watching people starve to death while you and your family are well fed. That's what's known as the good German concept. Well, you're not a good German if you do that. You're not a good person if you do that. You may be good to your family, to your friends, to your beliefs, but there's something in you that's unwavering. There is no doubt. There is absolute conviction, just like with ISIS. You see all those people lined up in orange jumpsuits and guys behind them, and the guys are down on their knees and they cut their heads off. And when you see someone having their head cut off and the people doing it are laughing and the crowds are cheering, is that spark that was spiritually embedded in all of us, is it glowing, or is it out? Because in that moment, you're not spiritual. And think of how many people would call someone who was a Nazi, someone who actively engaged in the destruction and abuse of other people's rights. Would they have been condemned if they called one of those people an animal? If you were working the firing squads in Ukraine, in the death squads, were you an animal? Or were you a spiritual person? You see, this is what people don't do when they don't think deeply enough. When they get too immersed in needing to identify their own life and their own value system with a larger system. And hence, one of the most common reasons, the most common reasons most people have died throughout centuries is because their absolute irrefutable conviction in a religious belief. And that's why we had witches, or people, women called witches. They weren't. There were no witches. But up to 10 million people were killed because of it. I don't care how many times you apologize. An apology never does anything to change the outcome of what you did. That's the reality. So at the end of the day, we are what we do. So when someone does something without first asking themselves, is this the right choice? And if we think we don't need a right choice, we just need an emotionally justified choice. So if I feel that a person is acceptable because of their color or religion, or not because of their color, religion, or social class, that feeling is based upon a conditioning. Something is motivated, something is inspired, something has ingrained itself into my psyche to cause me that thought. Now go in and look at all the millennials today. Would you say that the majority of millennials are emotionally sound, highly motivated, respective, and disciplined individuals?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you, Maxelina, yes.
I haven't met enough of them. I've met some really lovely ones, but this is a town that's not entirely full of them, and I don't have a computer, so I don't know.
Well, I can tell you, having met an awful lot, that the majority are not. They're imbalanced. And I'm not saying that's their fault. I'm not blaming them. I'm merely making an observation. How did that happen? They had to come from some conditioning. Therein, I blame the parents. And what the parents considered more important than the unconditional way of raising a child to the best that you could, instead of the child just being an extension of a person's own emotional needs. So when that child that already is suffering from such obvious sociopathologies then determines on pure emotion that they are one gender or another, unless you do a lot more research, unless you take your time and explore any other opportunity, unless you've done your genetic testing to determine their proclivity, because if the genes test that they should be a boy and they were raised born a girl, then that's understandable. Then you want to honor what those gene expressions show. But what if it's the conditioning? And then what if the person makes that choice and later realizes the wrong choice? Who takes responsibility for what the person has to go through then, or the suicides that come from that? What I'm suggesting then is that before we rush to judgment, we should be taking our time, opening up dialogues where we have different input from different people to see what of that input makes sense and is reasonable and responsible. We can use it to make more informed choices. Right now, in almost everything we're doing, it's not informed choices. It's reactive choices and frequently boded by a body politic that itself is not balanced. Does that make sense to you, Maxelina?
I think it does, yes. We should not jump to judgment. Definitely, we need to think things through a whole lot more.
And we need other voices. We're only hearing the people who believe in something only listen to their own echo chamber voices. We need to hear the most responsible and enlightened voices from all points of view so that we make sure that we're not misjudging something. And that's, for example, if you go to Wikipedia and you look up Ayurvedic medicine or naturopathic medicine or chiropractic medicine, you're going to be getting a very biased perspective. The reality is those all work and scientifically justified and legitimized. But you wouldn't know that. Therefore, you would be making a decision based upon someone else's bias. And think of the consequences of that. So that's why I've seen this my whole life. People rushing to judgment are having too limited a perspective. I believe in bringing lots of voices on, not just those that agree with you. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much, Maxelina, for calling us from California. We're going to finish off our program today by explaining why you should turn off your router at night.
Back, everybody. One of the things that we need to talk about, and maybe it's a little out there for some of you, but that's EMF, electromagnetic fields, or electromagnetic radiation. When we sleep, even when we're around during the day, when we're up and about, when we're at work, when we're at home, we're exposed to numerous electromagnetic fields. So anytime you've got electricity moving through a wire creates a magnetic field, that's an EMF. Also, our microwaves, of course, and our cell phones and the internet routers that we all use. So most of us have wireless internet routers at home. Most of us use cell phones. And exposure to that EMF radiation from the cell phones and from the wireless internet may be impacting both our health and our sleep. There's still research out on this. However, the general consensus that we hold is it's better to turn these devices off at night and get as little exposure to this EMF radiation as possible, because it's not going to hurt you to get less exposure in the long run, and it may significantly impact your health to reduce your exposure to have higher health in the long run by reducing the EMF radiation that you're exposed to, especially at night. So at night, assuming everybody in your house goes to sleep at night and isn't up all night working on the internet or using the cell phone, you can turn off the EMF devices. So of course, most of us have our phones. A lot of us like to use our phones on our bedside stand as our alarm clocks, or so that we know what time it is during the night. I do this, but turn your phone into airplane mode. That's why it's there, to reduce the cell signal that's coming to and from your phone. That's the first thing that you always want to make sure that you do if you just don't keep your phone out of the bedroom completely. The next is turning off your internet router. This can be a huge pain in the ass for most of us. My internet router is down here in my basement. All of the bedrooms are upstairs. So at the end of the night, I'm upstairs, I'm getting ready for bed. It's a huge pain in the butt for me to walk downstairs, unplug the router, or turn it off. And then again, when I get up in the morning, to go downstairs and turn it back on. I start turning on my devices. There's no signal, nothing works. I have to remember, oh, I forgot to turn on the wireless internet. So turning that off at night is key, and I'll give you some real easy tips for how to make that much, much easier in your life. And some people go so far as to put their bedroom, and if you're building a house, you can do this. If you're building a house or you're totally rewiring an existing house, put your bedroom on a separate circuit so that you can go at night and turn that circuit off to your bedroom, which means there's no electricity going through the walls in your bedroom. You're completely free of those EMF fields as much as you possibly can. Some people go even further. I will link you out to.
Okay, now you know why you should unplug your router turn off your computer, but unplug it. That saves you from the electromagnetic pulses going through walls and penetrating your body. I want to thank all of you for listening. Just one last quick note. I'm hiring a photographer to work on my newest cookbook, Must Be a Professional Photographer. This is all about photographing dishes. And I've completed 180 new recipes. And you have to be a professional photographer, having experience photographing foods, have a white box. And you can call our office at 646-926-5422 and leave your name and information. Or you can send us a resume at prnstudio@gmail.com. Have a nice day, everyone.